e-cigarettes and vaping. One of the many new laws that goes into effect tomorrow in Maine concerns e-cigarettes. After today, electronic smoking devices will be banned outright in Maine schools. The law comes as school administrators have seen the use of e-cigarettes, or vape pens, skyrocket, and as the nation is seeing a rise in illnesses and deaths related to them. But Maine's law does not go as far as some other states. Yesterday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo banned all flavored e-cigarettes and ordered them pulled from store shelves. Michigan has also passed a broad ban. I'm Jennifer Brooks. Just what are e-cigarettes and how dangerous are they? Will school administrators really be able to detect them in backpacks and lockers? Does the new law go far enough? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Tomorrow, a law takes effect in Maine that bans vaping in Maine schools. Today, we're going to talk about what we are learning about the dangers of vaping and how the new ban will be enforced. Joining me in the studio, Dr. Nirav Shah, director of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC. Eileen King, the deputy director of the Maine School Management Association, and Lance Bushy with the American Lung Association, where he is senior director of state advocacy. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you vape? Are you concerned about your kids vaping? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Dr. Shah, just a few minutes ago, you released an advisory to news organizations in Maine about this very issue. Not the law tomorrow, but the national outbreak of e-cigarette-related illnesses. What do you want people to know?
Well, thank you for having me. What we've learned in the past several months in the scientific and public health community is that there is a new type of illness that's been out there that we're now detecting, wherein individuals who have used vaping or e-cigarette products, a certain fraction of them are coming down with a very severe lung disease. Sadly, there have been a number of deaths across the country. We at the Maine CDC are actively investigating and monitoring the situation to look for potential cases here. But what this really tells us is what a lot of us in public health have thought and talked about for a long time, which is that vaping carries risks. Our lungs are made for oxygen. And anything other than oxygen that goes in them carries the risk of potential harms. And what we're seeing with these cases most recently is an uptick in those kinds of harms.
Have there been any confirmed cases in Maine of this illness that we're seeing across the country?
As of right now, there are no confirmed cases. We're investigating reports of cases, and we're following the national CDC's protocols for conducting those investigations.
And do we know if these cases are new, or do we think that perhaps maybe it's just because of increased awareness that they're being diagnosed now?
That's really the $64,000 question. Anytime there's something new that comes on the scene in public health, especially with an outbreak, is this new or are we just now detecting it? On one hand, it might be new because there are new and different ways that individuals are using e-cigarettes with different chemicals that we don't really know. And we don't really know how they interact with each other. On the other hand, it's also possible that because e-cigarette use is so much more prevalent and it's talked about in a more open fashion with patients and their doctors, we're just now having a better sense of what might have been going on all along. There's good reasons to think that it could be a little bit of both as well. That's an active area of scientific research right now.
Lance, I want to turn to you and back up just a little bit. Anyone who has teenagers around probably knows what an e-cigarette is, but I suspect there are a lot of people in our audience who have only experienced e-cigarettes by watching the news on television. Tell us, describe to us just what an e-cigarette is, what vaping is. It's a fairly new phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, e-cigarettes have been around for about a decade or more, and the American Lung Association has been sounding the alarm about these. There are, for many years, it was a wild, wild west of tobacco products.
They're little, right? It's not
they're
like
small devices. Juul is the most popular one on the market, and it looks like a flash drive. If it was sitting on your car seat or your kid's desk, you might think that it is a flash drive. And one thing you had mentioned that parents of teens know. A lot of parents of teens don't. That's what we're finding out as we talk to parents. Because these devices are so small, come in various shapes, sizes, that one of them looks like a key fob for your car. They're concealed in classrooms, and we'll learn more about the use in schools as well. But we have education materials out just to direct parents to learn more about both the harms, but also what these devices are.
Sure. So they're little. They have liquid in them. The liquid may have nicotine. It may have other substances.
There are chemicals in them from carcinogens, hard metals, nicotine. Liquid nicotine is in the vast majority of these devices contain nicotine. The most popular one, Juul, that I mentioned, one pod is about 0.7 milliliters, which is a tiny amount of liquid, but contains the nicotine that's in a pack of cigarettes.
And a pack of cigarettes. And it's an aerosol. People say vaping, but it's not really a vapor. It's an aerosol, and it's ingested in what way?
These devices all have a battery and a heating element that when a user inhales on them, the aerosol is inhaled into their lungs, the chemicals are taken into their lungs, and then emitted, much like secondhand smoke. Secondhand emissions from these have been found to have similar chemicals in them as well.
All right, Eileen, turning to you, I have an 18 and 21-year-old. My kids tell me that everybody vapes, that the numbers that are in the statistics are far lower than the reality, that this is not something that a certain kind of kid does, that it's everywhere. Is that what you're seeing in the schools?
That's what I'm hearing from northern Maine, southern Maine, down east Maine, across the state of Maine, that it has exploded exponentially, especially in the last year. The students that are vaping, I believe, were lured in the very beginning into a sense of security because the advertisers were saying they were much safer than cigarettes. But because they have no odor, because, as it was explained, they could look like a fob, it can look like a pen drive, that they're easily, you know, hidden. And it's taking place across the schools in the state of Maine. And it's becoming it is the number one concern for school administrators.
Is part of the appeal for kids, the surreptitiousness, if that's a word of it, the fact that they are little and you're getting away with something by bringing these to school?
Well, I think it's, you know, part of the developmental, you know, journey of a teenager of testing things out, trying things. You know, we have kids that, you know, try alcohol. We have kids that, you know, try, unfortunately, drugs. And this just came along as something else to try. Social peer pressure, you know, it's just a variety of things. It's just the next thing coming down the road. We just have the adults are about 10 steps behind the kids. And I see this in Maine that they're trying to catch up and now trying to manage this situation.
Starting tomorrow, banned in all schools, banned on school properties. Okay, so how do you enforce it?
So although the law starts tomorrow, e-cigarettes have been banned through many school policies. Since they became something that we knew we had to be concerned about. So if you look at our policies that deal with nicotine, they've been banned anyway across the schools and across the state. The problem right now is because of the odorless nature of e-cigarettes, it's hard to walk by a bathroom, open the door, and smell cigarette smoke because you're not doing that anymore. So it's easy for this to take place and not to have staff members aware of it. So schools are having to become very creative. I know one school that's having a staff member walk through the bathroom every 10 minutes, and they sign to make sure. We have no cigarette nicotine allowed on campuses anyway. So this just gives us a little bit more teeth when we have a parent that may disagree with us that their child was vaping or that it's not a big deal. So this gives us a little bit more support when we do have to address these issues in schools.
I read about some other states that have vape detectors in the schools.
Well, I heard the other day in the news, I did hear about vape detectors, and I do know some superintendents are looking into getting them. They're a little costly right now, but that would be a great way to be able to start to really monitor what's going on in the bathrooms and outside of the classrooms.
Dr. Shaw, talk to me about the effect of vaping, of e-cigarettes on a teenager's or a young adult's health.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we know as well is that, as you mentioned a moment ago, there is this conception that e-cigarettes are safer than traditional cigarettes. And I think it's important to point out that that is about the lowest bar imaginable to hurdle traditional cigarettes are one of the most dangerous, if not deadliest, consumer products that have ever been introduced. So the notion that e-cigarettes might be safer, while true, is not really where we should be striving. What we know, as Lance mentioned, is that these products contain really high amounts of nicotine as well as other chemicals that have yet even to be described. What that means is that the health effects that we used to think might be associated with vaping, we thought that they might be long-term or chronic, that in 10, 20, or a certain number of years in the future, we would start to see those problems because of long-term nicotine exposure, among other things. What we've seen with this latest spike of cases, however, is just the opposite, that we're now seeing very acute cases of illness associated with vaping. In research that was published just in the past couple of weeks about these cases, what we've seen is that the average age of individuals who have had to be admitted to hospitals, sometimes to ICUs, is around 19 or 20. So this is definitely something that's affecting young people in a number of ways. The high doses of nicotine, as well as these other chemicals that can be found, can cause a very rapid heart rate. They can cause various GI symptoms. And as we've seen most recently, they can cause very serious lung disease. So again, lungs are really designed for oxygen. And when we put and introduce these new substances into the body, the health effects can be ranging, and we're really just now starting to understand what those might be.
Maine has one of the highest rates of asthma in the country. How does vaping affect folks with asthma?
It can certainly aggravate the case. Any individual who has asthma or any number of other lung conditions that someone, a young person, might have, whether it's allergies up to something even far more severe like asthma, anytime we're introducing a new substance into the lungs, it can have a range of effects, including, as we've seen, these very severe illnesses.
All right. I'm going to ask both you, Dr. Shaw, and Lance, the same question, because I understand you agree but also disagree on this. Lance, is there any circumstance in which vaping might be a good thing?
No. Last week, the American Lung Association put out a very strong statement that no one should be using e-cigarettes and vaping. That includes adults. That includes children. People have talked anecdotally about these as a cessation product, but their FDA has found no e-cigarette to be safe or successful in helping a tobacco user quit tobacco products. Switching to e-cigarettes still enables the nicotine addiction, and there is concern of going back to regular combustible cigarettes and the harms that exist with those. And we really believe that any individual who is interested in quitting, the American Lung Association has decades of helping smokers quit. They should call their tobacco helpline in Maine or 1-800-QUIT-NOW. Talk to their physician about using FDA-approved methods to quit smoking and quit using tobacco products.
Dr. Shaw.
My view is that if you are not currently vaping or using e-cigarettes and you're looking for a new hobby, it should not be e-cigarettes in any way, shape, or form. There might be a world where after we get more research and after FDA has had a chance to evaluate it, there might be a world in the future in which e-cigarettes are viewed in the same way that, say, a nicotine patch or nicotine gum is, which is as a potential way, among many ways, like Lance mentioned, one of many different options for folks who are looking to step down from traditional cigarettes. And that's a possibility that may be off many years in the future. Certainly more research is needed, as well as FDA's vetting of that.
Eileen, as superintendents and principals around the state pay attention to this issue, and now with this new law, are they looking for guidance from you? Are they looking for help from the state? What do you tell them?
The schools that they've been dealing with this for at least over a good 2 years right now. They're looking for support from Maine School Management through our policy development. They're looking at educational programs. They're beefing up their health programs, and as low as the very low grades, the elementary school, where we used to focus on the problems with nicotine. Now they're really talking about the problems with vaping and e-cigarettes. Our health programs at the middle school and the high school are really talking about the statistics that we're getting from the American Lung Association, the CDC, and nothing's being sugar-coated. It's like, these are the facts, folks, and this is really dangerous and you need to stop. My concern is that, as I said, the kids are 10 steps ahead of us, so kids can be vaping at home and parents will not know what's going on in their child's bedroom. So it's not just in the schools. So what we have, County Health, Lincoln County Health is reaching out to work with schools. So we have a variety of medical groups reaching out to work with schools. I know that we have parent groups that are meeting, you know, as schools open up, and we have open house nights for parents to come in. I know that there's education pieces being shared with parents so they can look and be aware of what if their child is vaping at home. And so we're trying to do as much as we can to get the word out on the dangers of vaping and educate parents so that they can also be cognizant of what's going on in their own house.
Lance.
Yeah, just one thing I wanted to point out. Just yesterday, the American Lung Association launched a new program, an alternative to suspension program, to work with schools called In Depth. With the new stats showing that almost 28% of kids are vaping. In addition to, we want to give them the support to quit and learn about this. And instead of suspending them or having punitive measures that we know do not help them curb their addiction to nicotine, this new program is free, available to all schools, and is an alternative to suspension and help get kids the support they need to end their addiction to nicotine.
All right. What is your advice, Lance, for parents? How do you find out if your kids are vaping?
That is another place I would urge people to go to lung.org/e-cigarettes. We have a program called the Vape Talk, which is a conversational guide to ask your preteen questions, because this isn't just high schools. I mean, we're seeing this in middle schools. Kids as young as 11 and 12 using these devices. So both the parents need to get educated about the devices, the concealability that we talked about, and how to have the conversation with their kids, give them some education on the harms of nicotine and using these devices and inhaling this aerosol into your lungs.
Dr. Shaw.
One of the things that we recommend is starting that conversation with just asking and assessing any child's understanding of whether these devices are harmful. A lot of that just starts with correcting the facts. We've also heard, because of this uptick in illnesses, now almost 400 cases nationwide, we've heard anecdotally at the CDC that young people are taking note of this and themselves are stopping this behavior and maybe even reporting their own peers.
And that's some of the information I've learned, is that with the recent information that's coming out, and that the fact that the health teachers across the state of Maine are using these reports and getting this information out to our students, that, you know, Maine has really great kids, and they really take care of each other. So we're hearing that kids are starting to let administrators know and teachers know that some of their friends are vaping or have vaped in school. So if there's a silver lining right now to the information that's coming out, is that our kids care for each other, and they are concerned about the health of their friends and their peers.
Well, we're talking about e-cigarettes, vaping, and Maine's new law banning e-cigarettes on Maine schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Abbey Museum, Maine's only Smithsonian affiliate, open every day with a full schedule of family-friendly programs and workshops, abbeymuseum.org. And Long Road Energy, whose goal is to help Maine businesses utilize solar and lower energy costs, in Portland and at longroadenergy.com.
After the attack on Saudi Arabian oil facilities, President Trump says he's waiting for guidance from the Saudis on how the U.S. should respond.
The fact is that the Saudis are going to have a lot of involvement in this if we decide to do something.
I'm Audie Cornish. A look at the president's close relationship with the Saudis, that's this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's coming up this afternoon at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. Ken Burns' country music documentary continues tonight on Maine Public Television with a visit to the years 1953 to 1963. We'll travel to Memphis, where Sun Studios artists Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley usher in the era of rockabilly. Ray Charles crosses America's racial divide by recording a country album, and Patsy Cline shows off Music City's smooth new Nashville sound. Country music tonight at 8 on Maine Public Television with a rebroadcast at 10. All this week's episodes are available anytime on Passport. And the second half of country music will air next week, Sunday through Wednesday.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what we are learning about vaping. Joining me, Eileen King, the Deputy Director of the Maine School Management Association. Dr. Nirav Shah is director of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and Lance Bush, senior director of state advocacy with the American Lung Association. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start here with an email from Emily. She writes, I just finished my pediatric residency at Maine Medical Center, and this is not new. All caps, not new. We have had several adolescents hospitalized and even in the PICU intubated with the only identifiable trigger to be recent vaping. I think awareness is increasing, and now that the CDC is involved, we can track it more easily. What do we know about the prevalence of using THC in e-cigs and the potential ingredients in those solvents?
What we know is that there are so many different products, chemicals, molecules that go into the types of liquids that individuals use in vaping. THC, or which is the active ingredient in marijuana and cannabis, is one of many of those. Nicotine is usually the form or the substance that's used in the types of e-cigarette liquids that are sold in retail shops. THC is often sold in other back alley means, but increasingly as cannabis use becomes legalized across the country, we are starting to see THC as one of the components that's in the vaping liquids. What we know, again, is that although these liquids might exist, when they are heated up and mixed with each other in new and different ways and inhaled deeply into the lungs, they can react with the body in ways that we don't quite yet understand, and that's probably a large part of what we're seeing right now.
All right, we'll go to Alex, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Alex, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay. I'll make this quick. I'm calling. I have a Facebook friend who runs a vape shop of some sort, and ever since the recent news came out about these deaths in particular, he is absolutely livid that the media is misreporting and being irresponsible in blaming these on vaping in general, when he insists that it is, and I don't want him to speak for him, I think he's in line behind me in May call, I told him I was calling, that it is caused by the illegal cartridges, people that buy these out of the backs and trucks and whatnot, and that simply smoking e-cigs, there is no evidence that they are harmful on that level.
Okay, Alex, it's a good question. I will put it to our panel. What do we know about the illnesses and the deaths that have been reported across the nation? Are these over-the-counter products, or are these back alley out of people's trunks?
What's important is that although many of the cases that we've seen of the 380 or so across the country have reported using products that contain THC, this active ingredient in cannabis, not all of them did. And this is an area that's under pretty intense investigation. But even if you leave aside the current spike in cases over the past few months, even if you look before that, there were several other acute systems or acute problems that were associated with e-cigarettes. Those included a phenomenon called popcorn lung. Those included very difficult or extreme difficulty in breathing. And in some cases, that included the devices exploding in people's faces. So even if you leave aside the current cases, many of which have reported using THC, maybe there were other substances, or maybe they were using substances that contain more than just THC, there's still a lot of other health risks associated with vaping.
All right, Alex, thank you for your call. We'll go to Maggie, who's calling from York. Hi, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. About 10 years ago, I bought an e-cigarette from my pharmacist because I thought it would help me stop smoking. I didn't like it because it felt like holding a big piece of chalk, and it just wasn't for me. I think you answered this question earlier. Why aren't these things maybe something a doctor should prescribe to assist people to stop smoking? It seems so out of control now, and so many kids, I'm hearing this, kids in school, I mean, they're banned on airplanes. I mean, it should be a no-brainer. They're banned in school. But the other comment I wanted to make is, you know, all middle grade school go through the DARE program. I'm never going to smoke. I'm never going to do drugs. I'm never going to drink. And then by high school, they're all doing it. But I do think these things should be probably by prescription only. They should either be nicotine or menthol to get people off of cigarettes. I just don't understand how this became such a big industry. And I, you know, it's the tobacco industry trying to, okay, cigarettes are bad, so we're going to make money other ways. The whole thing is bad.
Maggie, thanks so much for your call. And Lance, let me ask that basic question. If indeed at some point in the past these were being used, these e-cigarettes were being used as a medical device to help people quit smoking, why are they not only prescription only? Why are they available over the counter?
Well, I mean, that goes to FDA's oversight and review of cessation meds. When this product started over a decade ago, there was a court challenge by the industry to not be considered a cessation product. So there is a pathway, if these products wanted to be approved for cessation purposes, to go to the FDA and get approved as that. To date, so far, the FDA has approved 7 FDA-approved cessation products from the nicotine replacement therapies such as the patch and gum or some prescription medications. And those are the methods that are proven and approved by the FDA to help with smokers get off tobacco.
All right. We'll go to Jonathan calling from Scottsdale, Arizona. Jonathan, are you listening to Maine Calling from Arizona to find out about this show on a Google alert?
I found out from a Facebook friend who was just on a few minutes ago.
Okay, go ahead.
I live in Arizona. I own a smoke and vape shop in Maine, and I'm also an owner in a licensed medical marijuana in business out here in Arizona. And it is so frustrating to see the 7 deaths that have happened. They're all related to THC and CBD. They have not shown us one example of a person, one of these 7, who is strictly an e-cig user and being nicotine related. The problem is coming from vitamin E acetate, which is a cutting agent that's used in THC and these CBD cartridges.
All right, all right. Dr. Shaw?
Well, this is an area that's under intense investigation, I guess. One way to look at this is how long do we want to wait before we know what we're dealing with? And it is the case, as the caller mentioned, that at least one state in New York, many of their cases, the liquids that they were able to obtain from the individuals who got sick did show high levels of vitamin E, which sounds like it might be healthy, but when heated to a high temperature and combined with other chemicals and then inhaled very deeply and then left to cool a little bit in the lung, it's not so safe. There's a lot of investigation underway right now to try to determine what exactly among the vaping is causing or the e-cigarette use might be resulting in these deaths. Is it a chemical? Is it a behavior? Is it a combination of all of these things? And the question that really comes to mind is how far along in this process do we want to wait before we sound the alarm to let people know that there might be reason to take pause in using all of these substances, all of these devices, until we've really sorted out what's going on.
All right. Well, Jonathan, you'd want to push back on that because your business depends on it, right?
Well, is this a doctor that's on the phone here?
Yes, it's a doctor who's head of the Maine CDC.
Great. These cigarettes have been on the e-cigarettes have been on the market since 2004. Okay, so we've got like 15 years of history with this stuff. All right. I've heard the term popcorn lung since day one. And the only, I don't see any of these popcorn lung issues. Do you? I mean, where are all the deaths associated with e-cigs compared to the 480,000 deaths a year from cigarettes? If you ban this stuff, you're just going to turn people back to cigarettes, which really kill people, and not this mass hysteria that's been created over 7 deaths from tainted products.
Jonathan, let me stop you and ask you, though, would you encourage a 12 or 13-year-old to vape?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But if it was a choice between cigarettes and vaping, 100%.
How about if it's nothing or vaping?
Even better. But that's not the case. That's not reality. Okay? Cigarettes are the killer. It's not nicotine. It's the combustion of the flower, the plant material of tobacco. Nicotine How many deaths have we seen from nicotine lozenge overdoses? You know, the Nicorettes or the patches? None, because you don't smoke it. You know what I mean?
Gotcha. Gotcha. Go ahead, Dr. Shah.
One of the principles of medicine is that the poison is in the dose. And what we know from e-cigarette usage is that the levels of nicotine, as Lance mentioned earlier, that are ingested just from one or two pods are far higher than even one or two packs of cigarettes. So like with all things, it really depends on the dose we're talking about. The caller makes the point that that e-cigarettes may not be or may be in some degree safer than traditional cigarettes. As I mentioned earlier, that's a pretty low bar to clear. But there is a good and thoughtful discussion that is happening nationwide about what role e-cigarettes have for individuals who are looking to find an exit ramp from traditional smoking. And that's the discussion we're having here. And science may show and the regulatory pathway may reveal itself that there is, in fact, a role for that. But based on what we know right now, our view is that we want to make sure that everyone has the risks. Given that these cases have been occurring for quite some time now, certainly a spike in the recent months, we want to make sure that the public has all the facts that we know as they're making their decision about whether to use e-cigarettes.
Jonathan, thank you so much for calling in. Important perspective on today's program. I'm going to go to an email from Ryan. I've seen 99-cent vape pens and $3 vape cartridges in convenience stores, which is very cheap for a teen. Cigarettes are much, much more. Maybe it should be highly taxed to create a higher barrier of entry for teens like cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the industry has marketed these products well with very low price points, undercutting discounts. The Juul product you can buy for $15, the new Enjoy one that he mentioned I saw for 99 cents myself at a convenience store. The good news is last legislative session, the Maine legislature did link the other tobacco products, which e-cigarettes fall into, that tax rate to cigarettes. So the tax on these products is going up. And that revenue, the other good part of that is the revenue from that is being directed to Dr. Shah's program and the Maine CDC. The tobacco control program, which does a lot of youth education about these devices, has been underfunded in the past decade. The legislature cut it. The previous administration kind of stymied the program while these products were being introduced to the market. So there is some good news that the tax is going up on these products, and raising price is one of the most effective policy strategies that we can do to combat the youth tobacco and e-cigarette epidemic.
What is the tax? How much is it going to go up? How much is this 99-cent vape pen going to cost soon?
It's a percentage of the wholesale price is what it is going to be linked to. So it is 43 percentage points is the tax equivalent. So the cigarette rate is $2 per pack. So the price will be equivalent to the cigarette tax rate.
So the 99-cent vape pen might be $1.30?
It's not going to go up as much as a pack of cigarettes. I mean, that is the concern, right? I mean, because you have other little cigars, tobacco products that are sold in a pack of 20 for $1.09. So there are some tax issues that we have that do make these less costly than cigarettes.
An email from Pam, nicotine shrinks blood vessels. If you're getting a whole pack of cigarettes dose and nicotine in one dose, no wonder people have breathing trouble after vaping. Blood delivers oxygen to the lungs. You are at risk whenever you decrease the volume of blood and oxygen delivered to your lungs. Dr. Shah, is Pam right?
Yes. That's the bottom line. Nicotine is a stimulant and it has addictive properties, and that's why folks like to use it. But it also acts on the body in other ways, like narrowing the blood vessels. And that could be one of the reasons that we are seeing some of these cases now. To the extent that nicotine may not have long-term effects, well, there's still a lot of research going on right now about the direct ingestion of nicotine straight into the lungs in such high doses and what that might mean in the short term as well as the long term.
We're going to go to Bill calling from Buxton. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, and great and timely topic. Just a couple points in a very quick personal experience with vaping. First of all, I just want to say Jonathan from Arizona, he can blow all the smoke he wants, pun intended. But, you know, for every – and I'm sure your doctor would have more accurate details on this, but, I mean, for every one person – that these vaping devices have helped get off cigarettes, they probably hooked another 100 students on nicotine. So first of all, you know, I can't believe our government fell for this scam. I mean, you look at all these vaping companies, you know, they're all backed by big tobacco. I mean, Altria owns, what, 30 or 35% of Juul? And why this was not prescription only, it just boggles my mind after we spent decades and billions of dollars trying to get rid of the scourge of smoking. And I don't want to tell you what comes to my mouth when I see these Juul vaping commercials on TV, and they, excuse me, and they show somebody who's narrating their story of getting off smoking by vaping. Why don't they show one where there's 40 kids in the parking lot at school dragging on the vapes? You know, it's just one big scam. And on the personal level, my daughter's a freshman in college, great athlete. She's there on a D1 scholarship for sports. They know before they even got there, the coach laid out the guidelines and the rules. She and several of the other teammates, even knowing that she could put her scholarship at jeopardy, couldn't resist vaping. And they all got caught and they all got suspended for a few games. And this daughter, along with her friends, I'm sure, none of them would have ever considered lighting up a cigarette. But here they are, all addicted to nicotine.
Bill, what do you think it is? What do you think it is? Why do you think these good kids who would never dream of smoking are vaping?
I think it's the cool factor. I mean, I think that was they're brilliant marketers, right? I mean, they look cool. They look techie. I mean, and then the flavors. It's like, how did we allow bubblegum and mango? I mean, really? You're trying to quit smoking and you need... Who smokes a flavored cigarette like that? Who smokes a mango cigarette?
Eileen?
I think he's got some excellent points. I think that the initial marketing led everyone to believe that they were safer than cigarettes. I don't think we had the data that we have now about the illnesses and the impact on the lungs. And once again, the developmental journey of a teen. They like to try things, and they like to experiment. And unfortunately, this is causing a lot of health issues and a lot of damage to very young children that they may never ever get over as they grow older.
We're talking about e-cigarettes and vaping. If you would like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet @MainCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Main Calling with help from Diversions Puzzles and Games by Main Mall, committed to bringing people together with new and classic games and a variety of puzzles. DiversionsGames.com. St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, helping patients live their best lives in motion. Online at findabonedoctorme.org. And Gracie Theatre's Women of the World on October 13th, a celebration of diversity and the power of music. GracieTheatre.com. On the next Speaking in Maine, countering weapons of mass destruction.
I worry that the norm against use of chemical weapons that had pretty much held since World War I is breaking down.
Andrew Weber has dedicated his professional life to countering nuclear, chemical, and biological threats. He spoke at the Midcoast Forum on Foreign Relations in Northport about programs to eliminate weapons of mass destruction. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Wednesday afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public President Mark Vogelzang is the guest tomorrow morning at the Brunswick Downtown Association's Speaker Series. Mark will speak at 7:30 tomorrow morning about Maine Public, from Mr. Rogers to Maine Calling, who's listening and watching. You'll find more information for tomorrow morning's event by visiting brunswickdowntown.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, vaping and the new law about to take effect to ban vaping in Maine schools. Joining me, Dr. Nirav Shah, the director of the Maine CDC, Lance Bushy with the American Lung Association, and Eileen King with the Maine School Management Association. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Jennifer, who's calling from the Blue Hill Peninsula. Hi, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I have a comment, but I wanted to just respond to an earlier caller. I have an 18-year-old niece in Minnesota who was one of the early cases diagnosed in the Midwest when it began to hit the news. She was in the ICU for 2 weeks on oxygen with popcorn lung. And so when he says, where are the cases, they're out there. So I just wanted to share that experience. But I wanted to go back to this reality of the tidal wave of marketing and how this was introduced, especially for young people, and to say that I think that's really a tool also in how we can combat this. one of the ways to reach teens is by helping them understand how the industry is really making money on their backs and that they're being taken advantage of. And I think along with other things that are developmentally happening with teens, that's an important piece of who they are. It's really recognizing how they fit into society and how they're being, you know, how they interface with corporate culture. And so I think that's an important tool, is also to help educate our kids in how they and their health, their well-being is taken advantage of. People are making money on their backs. And I'll just share my son, who's in school here on the Blue Hill Peninsula. A group of kids in this area recently got together and had a party where they made sport out of destroying their vaping devices. They used hammers, they used tools, they mashed them up, they put them into glass jars and took pictures and posted them on social media. So that kind of thing also can be a way to kind of help the kids push into new territory and get through this. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. You've got a lot of nods going on here in the studio. Dr. Shaw?
Well, first of all, I hope your niece is doing well, and we will keep her in our thoughts. You know, for any young folks who are listening to this right now, the message that I've got is really simple when it comes to vaping and industry. You are the target. It's no accident that vaping rates nationwide have gone up significantly in the past several years. It's no accident that a lot of people that you know at school are vaping. It's because you are the target of the corporate manufacturers of these products.
The other thing is, if you look at the cost of a 99-cent cartridge, and so they're making it so accessible and so reasonable as far as being able to afford to buy these products, that they're definitely, that's a perfect example that they are the target of the marketing, because 99 cents, almost any student can come up with 99 cents to get their hands on these products.
Eileen, talk to us about how easy it is for kids to conceal these from adults.
It's very easy, as Lance described. I mean, they come in a variety of shapes and forms. They're small. They can look like a key fob. They can look like a pen drive. They carry easily in your pocket. They carry easily in your backpack. And my biggest concern, and I know that schools are working very hard to educate parents, my biggest concern is that parents right now, many of them, don't know what to look for and don't know what may be going on behind their child's closed bedroom door. And because there's no odor. So one of the things that the kids are coming down to the principal's offices now are saying, the girls' bathroom smelled a little fruity. And that's becoming the sign that someone's vaped, because the girls' bathrooms usually don't smell fruity. High school bathrooms usually, middle school bathrooms usually don't smell fruity or like mango. So that's becoming the symptom or the proof that something's going on. So that's something to parents to, if your child's bedroom smells like mango, you might want to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I think the attractiveness of the market into youth is out of control. From the price point being very low and the flavors, we called on the FDA to immediately end the sale of all flavored tobacco products, not just e-cigarettes, but all tobacco products, including mint and menthol, and end marketing practice that target youth. We talked about it earlier with the CDC. I mean, the You Are the Target campaign is critical. Counter-marketing of this is so key to make youth know that they're being targeted, know the dangers of these products. And me as a 41-year-old male might not see it, but it's the 10-second YouTube clip that's how they're getting their marketing, and that's the sort of forward-thinking initiatives that we need. And it's good to see that Governor Mills invested $5 million more into the tobacco control program, because for so long, while these products were exploding on the market, we were not doing that. So hopefully we're taking the right steps now, and we will start to see these numbers come down.
We'll go to Larry calling from Surrey. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Can you get a little closer to your phone, Larry? We can barely hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
That's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. I believe the common denominator of vaping is oil, inhalation of oil, because the oil has to be some sort of a vehicle to deliver the substance that you're trying to breathe. And oil is extremely dangerous to your lungs. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Dr. Shah.
Well, Larry is right. Oil is extremely dangerous to the lungs. And what clinicians are calling this latest spike of cases is not just pneumonia, but a lipoid or lipid pneumonia, lipid referring to oil or fat that might be related to the ingestion of these. But Larry brings up a deeper point that's really important, which is we don't really even know what we don't know about these vaping products, these e-cigarette products. The FDA, as Lance mentioned, has not really stepped in to regulate them. And into that void, manufacturers across the world have started making these products and selling them in all different retail establishments. Some of them are licensed and legitimate. Others are from the back alleys. Many of these products contain things that aren't even remotely listed on their ingredients list. So when we talk about what's going on with these and what the common denominator is, in a sense, we're only seeing what we can see. We don't really know what's in these products that might be even more toxic than the ingredients that are listed.
We'll go to Barbara calling from Auburn. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for holding this talk. I'm in healthcare. I have a daughter who's 14 who vaped despite many conversations with her. I tested her urine for nicotine, and she knows that I will test on demand. So I offer that to parents who are out there. If you're not sure, test your kids. You can buy them on the internet. But my big point is the parallel of this to the OxyContin and opioid crisis. This is all about profit for the owners of the companies and the industry, and it's wreaking havoc on not just our children, most importantly our children, but on society in general.
Barbara, thank you for your call. Lance, would you agree with this? Are there parallels with OxyContin?
Well, I mean, like she said, with the industry, parallels too. I mean, this, as the previous call mentioned, Altria owns a large portion of Juul. It is about replacement smokers. It is about getting our kids addicted to nicotine. And measures that we have tried to put in place, we have run up against that resistance from the tobacco industry. And we had a flavor prohibition bill in Maine during the last legislative session that saw nearly $100,000 worth of lobbying against it from one tobacco industry. So, yeah, it is about grooming the next generation of their replacement smokers for their products and profits.
Go ahead.
I think what's really important, and Lance and I talked earlier, is when he talked about, you know, the pod is equal to one pack of cigarette. I don't think parents understand that. I don't think our kids understood that. I don't remember seeing our kids smoking one pack of cigarette a day. I don't believe they realized how much nicotine they're inhaling. So when they're going to parties and they're doing one pod, they're smoking a pack. And so how many pods a day are they doing? How many pods a week are they doing? And what impact will that have to them developmentally as they grow up and to their ability to step away from nicotine? They are getting seriously addicted because of lack of education and because of the alluring marketing that these companies did to get them hooked.
All right, Barbara, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Michael in Bucksport. Michael, we're trying to get a bunch of calls in at the end of the show, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll just get to the point. You know, I'm actually, you know, against the ban. I'll just hit the few points. Number one, you know, I think it goes outside the scope of government. People should be able to make their own choices about what goes into their body. I don't think it's the government's role to socially engineer generation. Number two, I'll quickly respond to another caller who said it was a great thing that her kids were committing acts of violence with hammers and uploading them to YouTube. I don't think that's a healthy way to address any problem. And finally, I think it's hypocritical for the boomer generation to look at my generation and tell me about and use the government to force products out of my hand when they're the ones who experimented with.
So, Michael, you say your generation. Can I ask you how you define your generation?
No.
Okay. Are you a teenager? Or are you in 20s?
I'm in my early 20s.
Okay. So you think it's a bad idea to ban e-cigarettes on school campuses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if kids want to, you know, engage in a particular product, we should teach them to be responsible and to make their own decisions. I don't think it's the government's role to you know, regulate our lives and keep us from ourselves.
Okay. Well, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Sherry calling from Auburn. Hi, Sherry. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I have a son who's 15, and the allure for his friends was a lot of the YouTube influencers doing the videos, you know, showing how you do smoke rings and how you can make certain things.
Sure, yeah, Sherry, that's something Lance was talking about, the prevalence of YouTube so much more with younger kids than ours. Thanks so much for calling. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. Tom, driving back to York. Hi, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I quit smoking using e-cigarettes several years ago, like 6 years ago or 5 years ago, actually. And it worked. I didn't try to continue smoking, an e-cigarette afterwards. I wanted to quit. I just think it's unbelievable that the nicotine is even involved with vaping. I mean, if it was, if they just had flavored vapes out there and it had no nicotine involving with it, maybe there would still be some health stuff going on. But I feel like the nicotine is the crime. It's they're putting nicotine in again to try to hook people. It's unbelievable that the regulations aren't more basic and not to cigarettes particularly, but more towards things that are hooking people and pulling them in.
Tom, thanks so much for calling in. We're tight on time, and I just want to quickly throw out to our panel, we haven't even discussed what other states are doing. Just yesterday, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said that's it, they're banned, pull them from shelves. Michigan's doing something similar. Lance, in your view, does that need to be the next step here in Maine?
Exactly. I mean, we want all flavored products, flavored tobacco products, including e-cigarettes and including mint and menthol flavors, removed from the market. I'm not sure Governor Whitmer in Michigan and Governor Cuomo in New York took executive action. I don't know if Governor Mills has that authority, but it is definitely something that the next legislature should look at to remove flavored tobacco products from the market.
Thoughts, Dr. Shaw?
Those states and many other states across the country are taking a look at other ways that regulation and state government can be effective, especially given the regulatory void that FDA has left. One thing that is important to note is that here in Maine, as with many states, we're a Tobacco 21 state. So in theory, children, young adults under the age of 21 don't have access to these products, whether they're flavored or not in the first instance. But certainly this is an area where FDA coming in would solve a lot of the patchwork regulatory approach that's being taken now.
Okay. Well, thank you all of you for being on the show today. That was Dr. Nirav Shah, Director of the Maine Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Lance Bushy, Senior Director of State Advocacy for the Eastern Division of the American Lung Association. Long title, Lance. Eileen King, Deputy Director of the Maine School Management Association. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.